Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Chelsea Echo and welcome to your preview of Chelsea versus Tottenham Hotspur. The game at the Bridge, which I'm sure we will look forward to on the calendar. And I'm kind of annoyed it's been moved a couple of times. But guess what? It's here now. And we're going to send Ange Postecoglou and Tottenham Hotspur packing, hopefully. But having said that, we are joined today by a guest. It's Chidge from the Chelsea Fancast. Chidge, how you doing, mate?
Hello, Louis. It's lovely to be on, actually. I mean, it seems like a long time coming, you know, so I'm really glad to be here, mate. It's lovely to see you.
Yeah, it's nice to see you too. Chidge was explaining to us what he was doing post the Villa game. It's impressive going. It's impressive going. Tom's here as well, in a similar situation. You were saying your anxiety kicked in with that voice in that review. Apparently, you were a bit worried about it.
Yeah. I just couldn't remember what I said and saw that it was like 2.5 minutes long and thought, oh God, have I just gone in? But you obviously didn't say send another one, and so I assumed it was fine. But yeah, that was, I think my rage at the pub was pretty bad. I'd been drinking all day, so I was pretty angry. But there you go, that's life.
It is. But we do have to talk about it, obviously, before we do get into Tottenham. The trip to Villa Park was, Chidge, I mean, for you, if you look at that game, how do you feel about it, look at it in hindsight rather than in the moment as well?
I watched it back this morning, and I mean, the first thing we have to say, you need to kind of preface this, don't you, with this is so Chelsea. I mean, they were so abysmal against Arsenal. Abysmal. They chucked it in, no question. Poch said it. We all knew it. And then, you know, second half against Villa. That's the Chelsea I want to see. You know, that's a top four side that was playing yesterday in that second half. They were fighting for it. They were winning the ball back high up the pitch. They were playing good football. They were keeping possession. They looked like a threat all the time. That's the Chelsea that we know and love and want to see. First half, I didn't think they were that bad, actually. But, Gallagher post-match said they were a bit lethargic. But, you know, they weren't as bad as they were against Arsenal, that's for sure. But second half was excellent. That's what we want to see. Trouble is, next match, they'll probably be shit again. And this is what I can't get my head round. I cannot get my head round it. How you can be so good in some matches and then so awful, you know, literally a match later. I mean, like City. They were brilliant against City, weren't they? I don't know if you were there or not, but they were really good. And then they're schizophrenic, mate. No other word for it.
No, I think that's probably the best representation. Unfortunately, it's the trials and tribulations of having such a young side is the fact that we're going to be having to deal with that consistently all of the time. But to be fair to them, they have been getting better, and I think you'd like to think that Arsenal game was a bit of a wake up call, because I think if you'd said to me 6 months ago, this side are going to go down at the end of the season against a team which are challenging for top four, probably going to comfortably get Champions League football, have been one of the best sides this season, and are going to come back from being 2-0 down, I'd probably laugh you out of the room. Should have been 3-2, but it wasn't. So I feel like we have to talk about VAR. It's a rite of passage. Tom, we have a thing, Chidge, right? So Tom is our resident stat shagger. So we have that as like a...
We were getting on so well, Tom.
Tom, as the resident stat shagger, statistically, should that have been given as a foul to Villa?
Statistically? I don't know about statistic.
I've got a statistic for you about it, and I'm not even a stat shagger.
Oh, well, sometimes you have to delegate roles. I actually don't mind it being a foul. I think it probably, I don't mind that, but there's consistency because there's so many times that happens and it doesn't get given. And it's the fact that the referee's right behind it, sees it, doesn't give it, and then goes and looks at a screen and they pause it in ultra slow-mo and then changes his mind. I don't know. VAR was initially brought in for clear and obvious. I don't think that's clear and obvious if he's given it in the first place. When I watch the highlights, both commentators are straight away saying, that's a foul, surely. So, I don't know. It's one of those. I think if it happened the other way around, we'd be saying, yeah, definitely the right decision. But to me, I don't know. It kills the joy. The joy of football is ruined when you can celebrate a winner there. You know, this young side, that would have been a massive win. 2-0 down. We've spoken about, do they have it, the ability to come back and things. And then yesterday, they did prove it. I think we were by far the better team. You know, that Morgan Rodgers goal. came against the run of play, and then the Gits had the audacity to do the Cole Palmer celebration. But, you know, it's one of those. As I say, the joy of football is gone. Whether it should or shouldn't have stood, I don't know, but it's annoying. I did like the arguing at the ref at the end. I know I probably shouldn't say that, but I liked people like Madueke showing fight, showing that they actually do care about the club rather than, you know, he's one that I actually thought he was really good yesterday, but he's one that a lot of people don't like. Obviously, the penalty incident, the other one, he's a Marmite player, I think, but I thought that was good. I like that, showing fight. You're showing you do actually care about the club rather than just your own personal performance. But yeah, generally, it's a weird one because we played well, but then that just ruins it all. And then I was angry, as you heard last night.
Yeah, that was actually quite an enjoyable one. I did enjoy listening back to your voice in that review. But on Madueke, Gidge, I did see there was a little giggle there from you, and I think you and I might be in a similar camp. What are your thoughts on him?
I like him. I think he's a really good player. I think he's going to get much, much better. I think when all of us lot, you know, that do these daft bloody podcasts and things, do our reviews of the season, he will be on the right side of the balance sheet for me, because he's definitely getting better. But I there was a wonderful quote. I don't know if you saw it after the Arsenal game, but Ruud Gullit was interviewed somewhere. I don't know where. And he basically said what I've been saying for weeks and weeks and weeks about a lot of these players, that basically they all think they're a lot better than they are. And they're not. They're not as good as they think they are. You know, they haven't won anything yet. And Madueke, as you said, he's a bit Marmite. And I think he does think he's a lot better than he is yet. I think he is going to get better, but he's not there yet. And I was saying after, I can't remember, it was possibly down to the penalty incident the other week. But I had the right hump with him on the Fancast, and I said we should sing a song for him called "You're Just a Shit Ronaldinho," because he kind of thinks he's Ronaldinho. I mean, his little kind of headscarf and his beautiful little kind of dyed straggly bits coming down here, you know, he's got all of that. But mate, you've got to back it up, you know, and you've got to do this every week.
No, absolutely.
So I mean, it was tongue in cheek, because I love all Chelsea players, even the ones I hate. So you know. But yeah, I think he's, you know, on the balance sheet, he's a plus this season, I think, and he's going to get better, no doubt about that.
Yeah, I think for me, I agree with the backing it up comment, because that's what I think he's failed to do a lot. I think he's getting better, but I think there's a lot of times where he thinks he is the dog's bollocks, when in reality it's like, okay, mate, you're 21, you come from PSV, you know, you're doing okay, you're getting better, but you're not as good as you think you are. No, it doesn't work. Hang on, we need to think about this. Madueke. Oh, that's better. That makes more sense. It fits better. But yeah, I think I'll give you a stat by the way before we move on from the Villa game, by the way, which is all about that incident, right? So there was a certain incident where a Chelsea player by the name of Raheem Sterling was pushed over in the box in a very similar fashion against Brentford. And that was pulled back for a free kick in the direction of Brentford. The same situation occurred against Aston Villa. And it was all clean, all fine. Referee on the pitch was happy with it. And a certain referee who was in the VAR box pulled it back once again. His name is Craig Pawson. So, I don't know if it's really a stat, but it's more of a statement which takes everything and puts it into context. I guess that there is a sense of when we say we want consistency, we have got it there with Craig Pawson. The consistency is not very good, though. So, I think that's something which we need to consider. So, you know, look, VAR did us dirty. It's, for me, it's another 2 points dropped. I don't know about you guys. But that's really probably about 10 points this season. I look at, we'll go, we've messed that up. We didn't mess it up against Villa, but you know, it could have been better.
To be fair though, it wasn't just VAR. We did have several chances as well to win the game. We shouldn't have been 2-0 down. Jackson should score the header, and it's same old Chelsea. You know, in the end, we walk away. Yeah, exactly. That one as well. I mean, we walk away from it with a decent result against a good side where we feel like we've been robbed, which is in a way a nice feeling rather than just being annoyed that the players have missed all the time. But we again didn't finish our dinner. Same old Chelsea. Hopefully that doesn't happen against Spurs.
Yeah, well, we'll get into that shortly. But, Chidge, we do something here at The Echo, right? We do our housekeeping, which is what, that's what we like to call it. It's our life admin. This is the equivalent of, you know, doing the washing, you know, maybe, you know, giving the bathroom a little clean. And we've got two things which we do. And I'd like you to be the judge for the first one. And then for the second one, I'd like you to... Well, I think Tom, we do something called Tom's Big Question, and it's probably something where he tries to make me look stupid and 9 times out of 10 fails miserably. But, you know, it'll be something which I'm sure he'll want to get you involved in.
I succeeded last
week. Yeah, he did last week. Did you know that Thomas the Tank Engine was from Birmingham? Who knew?
There you go. That's the kind of stuff you know when you come to this podcast. Useless information that may one day come in a pub quiz.
Hang on, did you know that Thomas the Tank Engine lives about 7 miles up the road from where I am now?
Really? That's well, there you go. It's someone else you learn. Now everyone's going to start figuring out where Chidge is or where does Chidge live, right? Yeah. And then get the radius map and be like, he must be here. We'll go find him.
So I should tell you, I'm in Winchester at the moment, but that's not where Thomas the Tank Engine is. But he is 7 miles down the road. 7, 10 miles down the road.
There you go. 7, 10 miles down the road. I see Thomas the Tank Engine. Used to come to the Tunbridge Wells Spa Railway. You see Thomas at least once a year when I was a kid. But that's by the by. We'll move swiftly on. Chidge, we do something called Forgotten Banger. Which is basically, it's a song, we pick a song, me and Tom, where we are supposed to be making a playlist, which I think Tom said he would get done.
It's in the works.
You said it'd be done on yesterday.
Yeah, I know, but I said that and then I was really busy on Friday.
And you went to the pub, didn't you?
Out all day yesterday. Yeah. Today's my admin day.
So there you go.
This afternoon, watching the North London Derby. Sorry for those listening, it's currently 11:52 on Sunday, so we don't actually know what's happening in that game yet. I probably will do it. I'll listen back to all the old pods and find it and put it together.
Well, there we go. But we do something called Forgotten Banger, Chidge, where we have to pick a song, right, which we think, one, is forgotten, two, you could hear out and think, oh my God, I've not heard this for ages, and three, most people would love. And it's not usually a competition, but I want to make it a competition this week because I like being competitive and I like showing off to people. I don't know if you've ever noticed that about me. It's just something I do. But Tom, what is your forgotten banger this week for Chidge to judge?
I've gone for a Black Eyed Peas song, but not the one that you're going to think it is because that is definitely not forgotten. I've gone for I'm a Bee from the same album. I think if you put that on in a club, everyone would be like, oh, this is a tune, and it would be fun. So that is my entry for this week.
I like it. I've gone a bit more classic with mine, because people always get the wrong version, and it really annoys me. So I thought I'd give a bit of education with mine. I've gone for Tainted Love by Soft Cell.
Oh, tune. That would work in a club.
Exactly, that's what I was thinking. I was like, it's a bit of me, that. But yeah, you put it on, have a good time, but everyone always bangs on about another version or the version they've heard on TikTok, and it's rubbish.
There is an original version.
By Gloria Jones.
That's right.
I know this, see, Chidge, I know my music, I'm all right. But yeah, the original's Gloria Jones. I used to live, actually, about 2 minutes from where she crashed the car with Mark Bolan, yeah.
My sister lives just around the corner.
Yeah, he lived. He was on Lower Richmond Road.
Yeah,
and then I lived in Barnes. So literally, about a 2 minute walk from where the crash site was. So that's that. That's my musical education. But Chidge, what's your favoured one here? Which one are you looking at? Going, do you know what?
I'm sorry, Tom, to do this
to you. No contest.
I'm sorry, Tom, to do this to you. I mean, I have heard of the Black Peas. I mean, you have to realise that I'm very old, so my musical taste would be very different from yours. But I have actually, in fact, I even own a Black Eyed Peas album, probably the one that everybody has. But I can't think for the life of me what that song was, so therefore Louis gets it by default. But I mean, you know, both. I was old enough for the Gloria Jones version and the Soft Cell version, but... It was quite a seminal song of Mark when I was a young boy, the Mark Ormond version. So, yes, I'd have to go for that.
Nice. Love that. So that's a victory for me. I'm very happy to take. Obviously, it's what we do. But Tom's probably going to try and get me back now and probably succeed. What is your big question?
I've gone for a different sort of avenue as we have a guest on. I thought I would get you involved and go back to what we used to do at the start of the year, where we would go through and run through players who have played for both clubs or whoever's playing. So this week, obviously, it's Spurs. So, Chidge, if you want to go first, we just basically name players who have played for both Tottenham and Chelsea, and then whoever can't get one first loses. I have a list in front of me of everyone, so you can go back all the way to 1906, which is the
This is time. Really funny, Tom, because on our preview shows, usually when it's a Friday preview show, can't be asked to do it when it's a Monday, to be honest. But when it's a Friday preview show, we do. We I'd like to think that we invented this. It's called They Played for Both, which is basically where I ritually humiliate Jonathan Kidd, who should know, because remember, Jonathan Kidd was at our first game in 1905. So, you know, he should know all of these players that have played for both teams, but usually he knows about two. And you would have thought I would know lots of people because I would have done my homework, but sadly I haven't. But I'm going to kick us off with two very obvious ones, which are Gordon Jukebox Jury, who apparently said he wanted to move back to his native Scotland to play football and didn't get much farther north than Tottenham, and was hated forever after, quite rightly. And the other one, close to my heart, is my old mucker Jason Cundy, who, of course, we sold. Weird kind of parallels, potentially. Jason was our young player of the year at the time, and he was all right, he was decent, and loved Chelsea, loved the club, as we all know. And Bates sold him to Tottenham because we needed the money. So he was selling our great youth prospects for money, and poor old Jace didn't want to go. And actually, there was a wonderful spray-painted slogan on the East Stand saying, "Bring Cundy back!" Because we weren't happy that we sold him. So there's two to kick you off.
Very nice. Okay,
you stole mine because I was going to try and be a smart-ass. I was going to go with Cundy, but now I'm going to go with another one. I'm going to go for Jimmy Greaves.
Mm. Probably the most famous, really.
Yeah, the best centre forward. Harry Kane can forget it. But England's best ever centre forward, as my father often likes to tell me.
Gustavo Poyet.
Gus Poyet's a good one. I'm going to go for William Gallagher.
Mm. Scott Parker.
Yep.
Carlo Cudicini.
Yeah. Did I end up going to Spurs?
You did.
Oh, I was going to do the next one. Can I technically say Willian?
No.
Okay. I'm going to. Stop. That's going to be tactical. No. Okay. I give up. I've lost because Chid just threw me massively.
Timo Werner.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, we forget about him, don't we? So Chid just basically just nailed this now. That's it's fine. Yeah. It's fine. Just can we just move on and just say you've won? Should we just leave it at that? She's just rubbing it in, going, I know all these players because I was born before Adam and Eve. We get it. All right.
It's a bit like your music quiz could have potentially been very unfair on me because I don't know any modern music. This is potentially very unfair on you because I am older than you.
I mean, to be fair, Chidge, with the music stuff, I don't really usually go past 1997. I'm very much like maybe early noughties. I'll push it to because that's the
a bit of Oasis and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, Oasis is never going to be forgotten because they're just so massive. You can't. I don't think there's actually a forgotten Oasis. No. Song.
Not for forgotten bangers. No. But just for general. Listening purposes.
It's pretty much the case. But having said all that and been humiliated in Tom's big question this week, which I'm sure Tom is a massive fan of, we'll move on to the only part of the show. We'll move on to the only part of the show which has a jingle.
Clive Allen,
you'll love it.
One.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Stat Shaggers.
The Chelsea Echo presents Stat Shaggers.
Yeah, that is right. It's Stat Shaggers, the bit that Chidge hated immediately when I was told. He was told that that's what I do, but that is what I do. And I'm here to talk you through Chelsea and Tottenham. And this is a game that has been played 176 times over the years. Chelsea winning 78 of them. There have been 42 draws and Tottenham winning 56. But obviously, we don't look back at the early fixtures in the 1900s. We look at the last 10 as a general kind of barometer of how the teams have been doing. And the last 10 has been pretty good for Chelsea, actually. Winning 6, drawing 3 and losing only once, which was last year at Spurs, a 2-0 defeat. Of course, included in that run was the bizarre 4-1 in the reverse of this game earlier this season. When Spurs' season imploded on itself with two red cards and key injuries to James Maddison and Mickey van der Ven, as Nico Jackson scored a bizarre, strange, brilliant hat-trick to win that game 4-1. Looking at home matches, though, and specifically home Premier League matches, we have a ridiculously good record against Tottenham. In the last 10, we've won 6 and drawn 3. And that one loss, of course there was a loss, came in 2018, which was incredibly, and still is incredibly, our only ever loss to Tottenham at Stamford Bridge in the Premier League. The last one before that came in 1990 in the old Division 1. So that is obviously something to be very positive about from a Chelsea perspective. On to the manager record. Obviously, Poch against Tottenham hasn't played them many times for obvious reasons. Even with that, though, his record is pretty average. He's only won once, which was that one earlier on the season with Chelsea. He lost all 3 against Tottenham when he was at Southampton. And then into Spurs themselves, their recent form. Even for Tottenham, they're on a weird run of form. Obviously, winning 2 against relegation-threatened Forest and Luton. They drew that one game against West Ham, and then they lost 2 games in their last 5 very heavily. 3-0 to Fulham, 4-0 to Newcastle last weekend. And that kind of ties into their away form, which has been pretty dire, to be honest. 2 games I just mentioned coming away from home. They also drew 1-1 with West Ham in that run. Weirdly, though, they did beat Aston Villa 4-0 away, which was clearly a bit of an anomaly. Villa's point against Chelsea puts them 7 points ahead of Spurs. So, hopefully we can put an end to their top 4 pursuit this weekend and continue our outstanding record against Tottenham at Stamford Bridge. But now, it's over to Louis and the enemy.
Hello everybody, welcome back to the Chelsea Echo and welcome to your opposition preview of Chelsea versus Tottenham Hotspur. The game which, like we said at the top of the show, we are always looking for. And I'm joined by Ricky Sachs from Last Word on Spurs to talk about everything Tottenham Hotspur. Ricky, how you doing, mate? You all right? It's been a while.
Been a while, Lou. Been a while, mate. Listen, I love catching up with you, just not talking about this fixture. I absolutely hate this fixture.
Oh, mate. I think, well, it's going to be an interesting one this year because both of us are... We're in a very awkward position because you guys obviously started so well and then you've kind of petered off, but then you've had a few good runs, you've played well here and you've been a bit poor there, and then we've just been rubbish all year, but somehow we've just slowly, like, we're working around the table. We're nowhere near you points-wise, by the way, but it's kind of a case of, I keep looking at where you are and I think about that Brentford game, I think about that Burnley game, I think about that Sheffield United game, and I go, what could have been? What could have been? But we aren't owing any of you, but you guys are chasing Champions League football. But before we get into all of that, right, you said there straight from the top, you hate this game. Why are you so worried about playing Chelsea in the state that we're currently in?
Because Spurs have a record there of 1-1 in the last 33. That's why I'm absolutely terrified and anxious and horrendously concerned about this game. Because Spurs play the name rather than the team. Regardless of who the manager is, regardless of who the players are, regardless of who the chairman is, Spurs have got an inability to go at Chelsea and believe mentality-wise they can get a result. And unfortunately, I don't think that's going to change.
Are you that adamant? Just looking at your face, you're just like, oh, I just don't want it. And I'm shocked because if I was
Lou,
a Tottenham fan right now...
Why are you shocked? We've got a record there that is absolutely horrendous. And we're not in great form at the moment. We've had back-to-back defeats. We've just lost at home to Arsenal. We've got an issue around set pieces. We've got a bigger issue around off-form players. So why are you surprised?
Because I just think if I'm a Spurs fan right now, after exactly everything you've just said, I'd be baying for blood going to Stamford Bridge thinking, right, this lot, they've lost 5-0 to Arsenal. We were very, you know, we played well in the second half against Aston Villa, but it was a second half. You know, I'm looking at that and I'd be going, do you know what? I'm up for this. I really would be.
Lou, there's 2 games a season Chelsea raise their game for. Tottenham at home, Tottenham away. Am I wrong?
Tell me
I'm wrong.
You're not. That's
why I feel the way I feel.
Oh, mate, it's going to be a good game, though. I mean, like you said, you've got some players that are off form, though. But who are the players that we should be worried about and looking for in this fixture?
I know you're going to think I'm being really negative here. I mean, look, at the moment, we don't know our best midfield. Mm-hmm. Barring, obviously, Sonny being an amazing player, we don't know our best forward line at the moment. We've got issues over the goalkeeping situation. Not that Vicario's a bad goalkeeper, but we've got this issue around him commanding his 6-yard box, which has been evident for everybody to see over the last 4 or 5 days and beyond that as well. Romero's been okay. But listen, again, with Tottenham, there's been a lot of concern over the former players, and that definitely has been a rising issue. And around Ange, look, we had an unbelievable start to the season. 8 wins, 2 draws, and There was a lot of could we, could we, could we? And then we had obviously a you guys visit, which definitely, definitely shook us up. And we've, do you know what? We've never really recovered since that night at home to Chelsea. Where, look, many were proud, by the way, Spurs went down fighting, but we lost four players in that game. Madison off for a period. Obviously, Destiny was suspended. Mickey van der Ven to a hamstring. Romero, obviously, suspended as well. And our season, it sounds mad, has never really got back on track since that Chelsea game. We've had, in the last 23 games, two standout wins, 4-0 away to Villa, 4-1 at home to Newcastle. But every other game by those two has had two or three goals in it in a margin. You know, Luton 3-1 at home, Forest 2-1, Palace 2-1, beating Brentford and Brighton by the odd goals, Tompkins away to Fulham, to Newcastle, to Brighton. It's been a really weird season. Really weird season. I think that is why what you don't need on the back of being beaten by Arsenal at home in the North London Derby isn't going to Chelsea away when you had a record there of 1-33, regardless of who's in charge, regardless of how bad Chelsea are, maybe as a group of players. I do think if Spurs stop Cole Palmer, they've got a chance, but Chelsea have been quietly going about their business. I think it's only one defeat in the last eight, but I look at Chelsea and it's very similar themes that I see when Maurizio was there. They nearly beat Man City. They nearly beat Liverpool in the respective cup finals. Nearly turned the game around against Aston Villa. So that gives you some confidence that with Maurizio there, doesn't tend to really get over the line in some of the big, big games. And I think you're probably seeing that now and going through it yourself. But what I think you can see is that he is slowly starting to maybe build something. I know there's a lot of fans that Chelsea-wise do want him out. I can see that as well. But all I would say is that if you look at the body of work he'd done at Spurs in that first season, very similar to Chelsea, where it was up and down and it was concerning about kind of inconsistencies, a very young squad, but you could slowly start seeing the body of work he was doing. And it was really the kind of second, third season where he will take you, I believe, back to the Champions League, but he won't deliver you a title. He'll get you so far. He'll get you back, I believe, in terms of the European football in the top tier, but you're going to need somebody from there to go and win you something. And look, I have said this a lot. I don't understand the hate from Maurizio from Spurs fans because he wanted to come back to Tottenham and they didn't offer him the job. And what I do find bizarre is that every time he's asked about Tottenham, he flirts about coming back, which I find absolutely, to a Chelsea fan, the worst thing you can do as a Chelsea manager to flirt about coming back to Tottenham when that is your bitter rival and you sing we hate Tottenham every week. So I just wonder ahead of his press conference whether he'll be that way inclined again, given the nature of how the season's gone.
I mean, I was that was going to be one of my next questions about how you feel about Poch and all that situation. But it's sort of, I think we've seen a slightly different Pochettino over the past couple of games, specifically since we got the batter in at the Emirates. Mm. I think after that, you finally saw someone with a bit of bite. Because for lack of a better word, there was, I think, people were talking about a lot of Spursiness about him. Like you said, there's the lack of being able to get over the line in those big occasions, right? And we saw someone who seemed a little bit weak-willed, a little bit meek in some occasions where you'd want somebody to rile people up, to go after people. But that's not in his character, really. You know, he says that quite openly. He's not really somebody who does that. And I think another thing which people never really understood was big away games and big opportunities which he had on those occasions where we did do well this season. I do look at, you know, the City game as a great example. I look at when we played Aston Villa in the Cup. Mm. I don't know if he did it with you guys, and obviously you were there, so you can tell me with the knowledge. You know, he never really came over to the fans. He never really engaged. And I think Chelsea, I think a big thing with us is
difference.
We need that. Really?
It's a big, big difference. Yeah, I mean, with Tottenham fans, he was coming over to us. He was clapping the fans every game. The difference being is we showed him love. We showed the man love. And ultimately, I thought what was really telling is, because again, people, I mean, look, this is going out to a Chelsea audience rather than a Spurs audience, so I don't mind me saying it to you boys. You might find this crazy. I watch every single one of Pochettino's press conferences at Chelsea. The pre, the post-match. Because I don't hate him. I've still got a look at him. And this is going to sound really weird. To me, he's still a Tottenham man. Which, I can see your face right now.
Oh, my heart just sank.
I look at him. He's still a Tottenham man. And I think he will come back to Tottenham one day. I genuinely believe that in my heart. And when I see him, I think he looks really sometimes uncomfortable. I use that word uncomfortable, being in an atmosphere at Stamford Bridge where he's not used to that. Mm. He loves to be loved and loves to give that love back. I'm going to be honest with you, as you know, Stamford Bridge has not been a comfortable ground this season to be at for a lot of the home fans because of some of the results you've got. I'm not saying it's negative overall. And from a fan experience going to Stamford Bridge, look, I absolutely hate it because you beat us there. You beat us there. So I've only got really an experience of Stamford Bridge of being absolutely horrendous. But when you're there week in, week out as a Chelsea fan, and there's that feeling that this team aren't getting the results they need, and there isn't that Maurizio Pochettino, he's magic, you know. You don't sing his name. You don't love him. And he probably thinks to himself, well, why am I going to give him love when I'm not getting anything back from them to give me the feeling that I'm loved here? And I think it's really interesting. He did a press conference 4 or 5 months ago where he said, I'm not walking away from this job, which I admire him for because he believes, I think, he can turn it around. But I still find it really weird, Lou. I mean, that guy was in the Battle of the Bridge, right? That game where it was hell and fire.
Yeah.
And now he's the Chelsea manager. And I know many Spurs fans feel this way, that how does that man go from being a Spurs manager to absolutely despising Chelsea? Because that was arguably for us a bigger derby than Arsenal at the time, if you remember. Spurs and Chelsea were gunning for the league for a number of seasons, you know, under Conte. Obviously, of course, we had that period where, again, we were close with you guys. I think it was Ancelotti there, it might have been at the time. But there was that rivalry there. He was so Spurs. And that's why I think for many that can't get over Poch, and we did our preview show actually earlier this evening, that many can't fathom how he went there, given that rivalry at the time there was between Spurs and Chelsea. And look, to answer your point, I'm going around the houses here. He would come and clap the Spurs fans. Home, away, he's one of us. He was always one of us. And the difference being is that I don't see any real love from him, for him, from match-going fans. Tell me I'm wrong. You're there at Stamford Bridge. Tell me I'm wrong.
It's tough.
Have you sung his name?
I mean, I have never sung his name, no, but that's purely because
you need to see something, don't you? You need to see something that convinces you he's right. And the problem at the moment is, for many of the fan base, you're split and you're used to winning. You're used to winning and you're in a project. And Chelsea have never been a project. They've been a winning club culture that if things aren't working, change the manager, you get success.
Well, it's true. I think the big thing with Chelsea over the past 2 years is there was a real cutthroat nature, which I don't think exists anymore. To be honest, I just don't think there's a very clear relationship and understanding. And I think for me, I'm not in, I'm not out. I'm kind of in a position where with Mauricio Pochettino, if there was somebody who fit the job better, I probably would sit there and go, okay, well, let's work the options. But the reality is, who's going to deal with these two sporting directors who constantly believe that another 25s policy is going to fix everything, when we're evidently seeing that that isn't the case? Even when Mauricio Pochettino's come out and gone, I need some older players here, I need some older heads, which is plain for anybody who watches football at any level to see. You know, it's not something that's not bleedingly obvious. And I think that it's a very awkward position, because that whole culture change, if this was the former regime, Mauricio Pochettino would never, ever be considered. And it just goes to show that there's a real clash of cultures of understanding what has been. And I'm even talking pre-Abramovich. You know, there was always the stories when George Graham, obviously, Arsenal, former Tottenham manager, was linked with a Chelsea job before Glenn Hoddle with Ken Bates. And fans would be sitting with there protesting, saying, we don't want him. And the club went, okay, fine. Football's changed a lot. And I think that's in some cases the better, some cases the worse. And that really interests me, because it shows that he is struggling, and it maybe wasn't the right fit. But look, for me, at the beginning of the season, I sat there and I went, look, as long as I can see consistent improvement, numbers-wise and with the eye test, I'm happy. Eye test-wise, I'm struggling to see it. I don't really see a sense of cohesion on the pitch, but that's not all down to Pochettino. But at the same time, I don't see the coaching. I don't see shape. I don't see clear instructions for players in some cases. But again, it could be down to the scouting on some players. I use Mudryk as an example for that. You know, he's a player who I think his football brain just isn't there currently. Mm. I think there's a player there, but his football brain just isn't there. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it all develops because things are going the right way. It's whether or not he will be given the time, or if he chooses to take the time, by the way, because at the end of the season with the review, he might just turn around and go, do you know what, lads, this ain't working. Based on what you're telling me, he might just turn around and go, I don't fit here, it's not working, thank you very much, I'll see you later. But, I mean, if you put the shoe on the other foot, how did you feel when Mourinho went to Spurs? Because he gave you guys love, even though he was, you know, a Chelsea man.
Yeah, I mean, it was a unique situation for Mourinho. What you've got to remember is, obviously, when we got Jose, we went straight into COVID on the back of the first season. So, really, when he was on that bad run, we had no fans in there, which would have definitely changed the narrative. But I think the thing with Mourinho is that, listen, I had one of my guys that are on last one, I suppose, every week quit on me and say, look, Rick, I'm not coming back on the show until he leaves the football club. That's how much they detested Jose Mourinho, because it wasn't just, you know, about what he won. It's about the character he was. And he went, look, I love doing the show, but I can't sit there and talk about Tottenham when Jose Mourinho is the manager who I can't stand, don't like his football, which, again, is an interesting one. I was behind the Jose appointment because I felt Spurs needed to win something to go to the next level. And I felt with Maurizio at the time, it ran its course. And ultimately, look, he gave me, and he still has given me some of my best memories as a Spurs fan. Would I take him back sentimentally? Probably, yeah, I still would, which might sound crazy to some fans. What I would say is that with Maurizio, in that first season, I felt instantly I could see what he was doing. Really, in opposite to what you're saying, I saw shape, I saw tactics, I saw someone trying to build something, I saw someone adaptable. And it's funny because right now under Ange, I'm questioning a lot of those things around his adaptability, around his tactical naivety around set pieces. We've conceded 14, the joint sixth worst in the Premier League. And even though we finished in, I think, a lower position or around the same with Maurizio in the first season, I was confident that he'd get it right. He had the fans on side really from the first couple of weeks because he played a lot of young players, similar to what he's done with Chelsea, giving the youth a chance. And ultimately, we just needed someone to come and put us back together. And he did. It's interesting. I think a lot of Maurizio, look, he's a Mediterranean man. We're two Mediterranean guys, Lou, here, that a lot of people have to be loved. And he's not really loved there. And that's why I don't think you've got that camaraderie where he comes to you guys at home in terms of clapping the fans or away from home. You don't sing his name. I don't think you're ever going to sing his name. That's just my feeling on it. I don't think he's going to be there long enough for you to sing his name. And I don't think he's going to leave a legacy enough at Chelsea there to dispel the fact he'll ever come back to Tottenham. That's why I feel he'll be a Spurs manager again. You know, some managers are just not fit for certain clubs.
Yeah.
And Maurizio, and Maurizio Pochettino, to me, is not a Chelsea manager. And you're not going to like what I'm going to say here. He's just too nice a human.
No, it's true. It's not because I don't like that. It's true.
I look at him and he's such a nice man. I think, how are you a Chelsea manager? Everyone Spurs go to at Chelsea. We hate Chelsea. We hate everything about Chelsea. What they stand for. The players they have. The nastiness of those players. And that is where I feel I'm at in relation to, yeah, your situation around Maurizio Pochettino. So, it's an interesting one. I will be not surprised if he's there at the start of next season. But if results don't drastically pick up, I think the Chelsea owners have got to get fans back on side, and I think they'll make a change. And I don't think Maurizio Pochettino will quit. I don't think he's a quitter. I think that's the one thing about him where he'll carry on for as long as he has done, because ultimately he knows the job he's got on there. That is not easy. I mean, what made me kind of chuckle to some degree is you're 4-0 up at home to Everton. You've got players fighting over a penalty. I mean, it's mental. It's insanity. And that's something he wouldn't have been to some degree used to at Tottenham, because what Maurizio did in that first season of the Spurs is he cleared out a lot of those egos, a lot of the experienced lads. He had a lot of young players that wouldn't question his authority. That's what I remember at Spurs. You got young players that would take him the way it would do. I think at Chelsea, I think because of the money they're on and because of the longevity of their contracts, I think he's in a slightly difficult position where he can't just bomb them out. He's got to work with them. And that's the difference at Tottenham. He can move on players that weren't really fitting his philosophy And ultimately, I hate to say this, you know, players aren't stupid. They do see a lot of what happens on social media. They see a lot of fan sites. They see a lot of YouTube channels and podcasts. And when things aren't going well, you believe it. Those players know it and they can play on that a little bit. And that's where I think with Maurizio, they know. A lot of those players will know we'll outlast this manager, rightly or wrongly. That's the way football is these days.
Mm. Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see. But we, before we move on and sort of wrap up, I do want to speak to you about Ange, because you said a couple of things there which really interested me. Because a lot of people, when I say a lot of people, I specifically say Chelsea football Twitter hipsters, or, you know, we've got them. We on the Chelsea Echo, we talk about them. Where I semi fit into them, but I know my football a bit better. I do own a tote bag, you know, it is what it is, can't do anything about that. But, you know, we got that and we got stat shaggers, right? There's different ones, right? And
love it. With
all of this, right, we look at Ange and people still look at him, or Roberto De Zerbi as another example, where they think, cracking manager, like really knows his minerals, knows what's going on. Having said that, you've said a few things about Ange Postecoglou which have made me raise my eyebrows. What is something that we could target in his systems where you say he's shown tactical naivety? Is it the high line? Is it just how he plays, mate? Is it one of those situations? What is going on?
It's just who we are, mate. It's just who we are, mate. I can't stand that. It's just who we are, mate. We'll play out this way. We're five men. That's what he came out of course, when you beat us in the reverse fixture. Look, we've conceded 14 goals from set pieces. We're averaging a goal, 1.6 goals conceded per game. That means Spurs have got to score two goals just to be in a game before they even try and win it. 52 goals conceded this season so far. Yeah, I mean, I know it's a project. I know it's season one. I know when you compare it to Klopp, Guardiola. Yeah. I get that. It's a process in time. I am seeing things that are deeply concerning me that aren't just about the first season, that aren't just about personnel, that are things that aren't being addressed, and he's had time to work on them. We had 15 days off before the Arsenal game. We go into the game, we've conceded two from a set piece, we're 3-0 down against Arsenal in a North London derby in 38 minutes. Unacceptable, unforgivable, shambolic. Tottenham should never ever be 3-0 down to Arsenal with a game gone inside 38 minutes. Can't happen, shouldn't happen, doesn't matter the player, the manager, the chairman, shouldn't happen, can't happen. But we did. And I think, again, I look back at that game, Spurs just took their... Well, Spurs in the second half came back into it, but don't be fooled. I mean, Arsenal took their foot off the gas. The game was done. Raya passed straight to Romero. We got a goal back. And then, for some reason, Declan Rice decided to kick Ben Davies up the arse and give us a pen with 5-6 minutes to go. So, look, I want to give him time. I do like Ange Postecoglou. I think he's a great man. I think he embodies something that's great about Tottenham. But I have my concerns. I do have my concerns.
Is he like a middle ground though? Like you were talking about all the merits of Spurs. I think one of the pitfalls of Tottenham culturally, which is why I think Mourinho wasn't a fit, why I think Pochettino maybe lacked in some cases justice.
The brand
of football. Like is he like a nice almost stepping stone to, you've got a side which has that Tottenham factor that you feel as fans that maybe fits within the identity of the club. But he also has that, maybe that winning factor where he's a bit... Because that's one thing I like about him. When he sits there and, you know, there was the interview about 3-4 months ago with the journalist said, oh, you know, have you got pictures of you with trophies? Like, yeah, I've got the trophies, mate. Like, what are you talking about? Like, there's that edge to him still. Do you feel that he is someone who could take you guys to the next level? Or is it a case of there's the worries you have, you look at and go, this could go horrendously wrong?
Well, I mean, look, he's come out next season and said he wants to challenge for the league. I mean, in the first 10 games, Spurs won 8, drawn 2. The next games we've had since, in the last 23, we'd be 10th in the table on the form. I'm not saying that's a lie there. That's straight facts. So, I mean, look, at the moment, we're trying to battle to get into the top four and he wants to compete for the league next season. We're miles off at the moment and I think it goes beyond personnel for me. I need to see something that there's going to be some form of adaptability where he's going to change to give me the confidence that it's all right playing the high line sometimes, Lou. You can't play it every week. You can't do this. We've been out tactics by David Moyes, Marco Silva, Eddie Howe, Gary O'Neill. You know, I'm not going down.
Look on your face when you said Gary O'Neill. He's had a good season, man.
Gary O'Neill, he's a good manager. These are good managers. Eddie Howe's a good manager. They are good managers in their right. Spurs shouldn't be 3-0 down away to Fulham. They shouldn't be being beaten 4-2 away to Brighton. You know, they shouldn't be beaten 4-0 away to Newcastle. Look, the funny thing is, as fans, when this first season came along, we said, we're never going to get some cuffings. We actually said that, but we've got to stick for it. The problem is we've had the cuffings and we're moaning about them, and I'm moaning about them. But for me, the thing under Maurizio is we had defeats in that first season, I remember, at home to Stoke, Wigan, West Brom. We lost 1-0. But you could see what he was trying to do and trying to build, and you could see it. I'm not saying I can't see that under Ange, but this continuous factor of the fact we can't defend from set pieces and the amount of goals we're conceding is really alarming. And I'm not saying I want him out, because we can't keep sacking managers every five minutes.
No,
because
of course not.
We are going to turn into the old Chelsea. I mean, who are we? Who are we? We can't be self-entitled Spurs as I want to change the manager every 5 minutes, because I don't think a manager's lasted a season in full for the last 4 or 5 years since Maurizio was here. So it's got to be given time, but listen, he goes to Chelsea and win. That would really, I think, give fans confidence that, you know, we can go away and get big results. I mean, look, we drew away to Arsenal, drew away to City, drew away to United. I mean, he goes and wins at Stamford Bridge and then goes and wins at Anfield. We're having a completely different conversation. Football's a results-driven business, Lou. You know that more than me. You know, results will change narratives and will change feelings. We've just come off the back of, you know, losing to Arsenal in the North London Derby. Biggest game for a Spurs fan in their season. Been battered by Newcastle 14 days before that. We need to see something. That's why this Chelsea game is massive. But mentality-wise, when you look at the fixture and what this has done to us, hopefully you can understand why I hold very little hope, because we don't tend to do really well in this fixture, regardless of who the manager is, who the players are out there and who we're playing, because we saw the home leg, for example. You know, again, Spurs went down to 9 men, don't get me wrong, but Spurs and Chelsea is a fixture. We dread it. That's probably half the problem. Mm. Our fans have got a mentality issue as well going into this game, home and away.
Well, we'll have to see what happens. As you know, I am a natural pessimist, so I'm just kind of seeing what happens in the game. I'm not convinced.
Even playing Tottenham?
Mate, listen, like you guys are not a bad side, and I think it'd be stupid for us to sit there and go, you know, oh, it's Tottenham, they'll roll over and let us tickle their bellies. No, it's if this was a Chelsea side which had the malice in it and the DNA in it of 2 or 3 years ago,
yeah,
with the way that we're playing now still, I'd sit there and go, yeah, do you know what? I think we've got a chance. But I thought that when we went to the Emirates. I thought that when we went to City away. I thought that when we played in other games. It's not quite there yet. You can see that it's coming together with certain players, even though I'll use Nico Jackson as an example, where he's even openly admitted, he's gone, I need to score more goals. You can see that there's a good player in there.
Can I say that with Jackson, I'm telling you this now, and you can clip this or whatever for your shows, that guy will never score a hat-trick again in a Chelsea shirt, apart from Tottenham.
Can you imagine he does it on Thursday night as well?
Probably will now have said that. It'll be a double hat-trick against Tottenham. That would be such a Tottenham-Chelsea thing to happen as well. You couldn't make it up.
Oh, no. It would be quite funny, but it would only be funny for me, because I'd be thinking about you going, he said it as well. He knew it was going to happen. But listen, Ricky, thank you.
What have I done for myself?
But yeah, listen, Ricky, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. Where can people find you?
Yes, we're on X, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're pretty much everywhere you can find a podcast as well. We're on audio platforms such as iTunes, Spotify, Spreaker, Podbean. Of course, we're also live on YouTube. So unfortunately, or hopefully fortunately, we're going to be going live after the game against Chelsea on Thursday night. So we've got star-studded panel joining us for that. But yeah, we're on YouTube after every game, before games to preview. So yeah, at last one on Spurs. Thank you so much, Lou, as always.
Mate, thank you for coming on. And we'll head back to the show now for the Echo 11. See you guys in a bit. Always good to hear from the Spurs boys, head of the Spurs fixture. It's always a lot of fun doing that. They are, it's a weird one, because they're going to be quite, even with that form, I reckon they're still going to be on a high. I think they can do us. But then, like we said, and as Chidge said, we are extremely schizophrenic, so who knows? We might come back and absolutely batter them 17-0, which would be great on the goal difference. But having said that, we are going to move swiftly on. Chidge, we do a combined 11, not combined 11. When we say combined, it's combined between myself and Tom usually. Jordan sometimes puts in a bit. But we also pick our 11 for the game. Now, when I saw you at the Cock Tavern, you nailed the 11 for the previous fixture when we were there. So I guess we can just jump straight into it. Gentlemen, and Chidge, you can do the first pick here. Jordy Petrovic is just like a given. So you can do the back line. What is going to be the defence for Chelsea versus Tottenham Hotspur? And are we playing three at the back, or, because it's the Echo 11, or are we going to be playing with a back four?
That's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, I think what really changed it against Villa was going to three at the back and moving Cucurella inside. I mean, I'm, you know, Enzo's not fit. So, and I mean, I think the other thing that we have to bear in mind is that, I was thinking this watching it back this morning, there's really nobody else available. I mean, you know, you kind of gave me a big up for getting the team right the other week, but it's actually very easy at the moment. If you kind of accept the fact that Poch will always pick what he sees as, I mean, this is a bit of a joke in itself, isn't it? But the most senior and experienced players, right? So he'd rather play Chalobah at right back than put Gilchrist in, for example. There is really nobody else he's got available at the moment. But I think that'll be the interesting thing. Will he play three at the back? It's, I mean, given Spurs like to counterattack and are very quick, it might be a good idea. I like the fact that, you know, what I think what really made the difference is that we won the midfield, which is no mean feat when you got players like John McGinn up against you, who's I think a cracking player, and Douglas Luiz, you know. So I don't know. I mean, Poch is, I think he's quite cautious in a weird sense. I don't think he'll do it, but I think he should, frankly. But anyway, so I think he'll go back four, and I think it'll be, if Silva's fit, because of course he went off injured, didn't he? So hopefully he's fit, because I mean, I was a bit weirded out seeing Badia Shiel start after the Arsenal game, but actually he did all right, to be fair. They worry me. Badia Shiel and Disasi, or Bag of Shite and Disaster, if you want to be cruel.
It's better than Tom.
I call them Dumb and Dumber.
Actually, so do we on the fan cast, Tom. We Dumb and Dumberer. Anyway, yeah, so I can't, the idea of those two playing as centre-backs together fills me with absolute horror, because the chances are that Spurs can do to them what Arsenal did to them. So I would like to see, if he goes to the back four, Cucurella. I'd go Cucurella, Silva. I'd go the same team, actually. I mean, Badashiel's kind of earned the right to start again, I think, after that performance. So I'd stay with the same. I'd pretty much stay with the same team, frankly. I don't think I'd change anything. I really wouldn't. I mean, I'd love to get rid of Mudrick because he's gash, but, you know, you can't, because there's nobody. You know, I mean, it's like Hobson's choice, isn't it? Sterling or Mudrick? Excuse me, Bob, can I have C? Neither. No, you can't, I'm afraid. So, anyway, Sterling's injured, so Mudrick picks himself because there's nobody else. But unless you change the formation totally, which you could do, you could move Jackson left, bring Cassidy in, Palmer goes, you know, maybe kind of false nine-ish, who knows, you know. So if you're going to play exactly the same system that he's playing at the moment, Mudrick gets a go. But if he changes the formation, then you can shove somebody else in there instead of Mudrick, which frankly, considering it means Chelsea will play with 10 men, wouldn't be a bad idea.
Well, I think that's a fair analysis. Tom, have you got anything you want to add to that, or would you adapt anything slightly?
No, I think he's you know, Chidge has said it pretty much there. There isn't really anyone else anyway, to be honest. And, yeah, I don't know. I think, once again, and this is no real slight on Enzo, but the midfield is better at the moment when Gallagher and Caicedo are playing together rather than when Enzo's in there. I think that's probably partly due to, obviously, Enzo's injury. I've never had a hernia ever, certainly not in that region, which I imagine is not very comfortable and therefore certainly slows him down and makes everything harder. Also don't think he's been used right. And yesterday, again, Caicedo, who I believe got player of the match, was outstanding. His two best games for Chelsea this season have been playing alongside Gallagher, the Everton game and that one. And again, Gallagher, I didn't know he had that in him, that little left-footed curl. I was assuming he was going to pass it. At Palace, of course. Yeah, I kind of forgot about that. But yeah, that's true. Yeah. But then you go, he had that in him. He scored a lovely goal. They played really well together. And I think that is obviously not going to be a thing to think about for this season, because Enzo's out for the rest of it. But for next year, assuming Poch is still here, or whoever is here, I really hope they kind of take that into consideration and use Enzo Wright, wherever Wright is.
Well, yeah. What do you think Wright is? Because I totally agree with everything you said there. I've got a bit down on Enzo because I think he's been shit. But then when you consider that he's had this hernia injury, then I feel, okay, maybe I've been a bit unfair. Because, you know, what we haven't seen this season is the Enzo we saw last season when we were absolutely awful. And he was head and shoulders better than everybody else last season. So we know he's a good player. But I agree with you. It's just doesn't. I mean, it doesn't work. Him and Caicedo together, it just doesn't work.
I think it's because of how they're being used. I think that the problem you've got with Moises Caicedo, and I've spoken to a few Brighton fans about him, and I've spoken to, funnily enough, a former Brighton player who played with Moises Caicedo, and he was saying that realistically, we're using him wrong. And Moises Caicedo isn't a defensive midfielder. He's more of a Kante-esque player where he wins the ball aggressively, intercepts it, and then makes that pass forward.
What we saw yesterday, wasn't it?
Exactly. So for me, it's a case of, I think the beauty of what we've got is we have a fantastic player if we use them correctly. And it's the same with Enzo. I think you'd see a lot more out of them. I do think that the problem we've got in that midfield is we've not got that player which can sit. People will say it's Romeo Lavia, but Romeo Lavia is, again, a very more interceptive midfielder. He's a player who likes to win and be aggressive. But the problem with that as well, and I'm in a smaller category about this, but I'd like to see Romeo Lavia go on loan next year, purely because he's not had the minutes this season. We paid a large fee for him, and there's going to be a huge amount of pressure on a 20-year-old. So I'd like to see him go find his feet elsewhere just for a season and then come into the side. But then again, he's also not a defensive midfielder. So I think Chelsea do need to look at that position in the summer. They need to look at this mine.
Do you know what I would do?
Go on.
You don't, because I haven't told you yet. Do you know what I reckon the solution is? You put Reece James there when he's back. And I'll tell you for why.
It's a terrible shout.
He's done it. He did it at Wigan, and he was very good. He's arguably one of the best footballers we've got in the club, so we know he's a good footballer all round. He's physical. He's defensively minded. I mean, I know we see him whizzing up the wing, but he knows how to defend. And I just cannot see Reece James's future as a you know, kind of Trent Alexander-Arnold-esque wing back, because I just don't. I think the injuries are going to, you know, have screwed him basically, and it's the most demanding position in the field to play as a wing back, up and down all game, and particularly if he's got hamstring issues and God knows what else. So I think the future of Reece James's career could possibly be in that kind of a position, and I think he would do an excellent job there, and it would allow Caicedo to hunt and forage like Kante did. The question then is, well, what on earth do you do with Enzo? Well, perhaps you put him further up. Because I don't think Enzo's physically up to being a defensive midfielder. He just hasn't got the physicality. But he's tenacious. And we know he's a quality footballer. You know, you could make the argument that his 50-yard passes tend to go astray. It's kind of weird. This is a bit of a weird tangential thought. But, you know, when we signed Juan Sebastian Verón, I was a huge fan of it. I was so excited that he was coming. And he was rubbish, wasn't he? Or that, so the narrative would tell you. I actually think that he was so much better than everybody else that they just weren't on the same wavelength as him. So he would make these passes and he was just streets ahead of everybody else. And they ended up going out and it just made him look crap. So maybe there's a bit of that with Enzo too. So it's an interesting conundrum. But yeah, I'd put Reece James in as the defensive midfielder to protect the back four.
So it's not a terrible shout. I do think there's definitely a shout for it, purely because I was saying in our post match space, we do like a 606 style call in. We were talking about the conundrum of right back with Malo Gusto playing so well. You can't just drop him. And to be honest, when he's at left back, he's good, but he's not a left back, and you can see he does struggle there on some occasions. So I don't think it's a terrible idea. I mean, for me, I think it's definitely something to consider, but I'd also still would look in the summer to bring someone in just as that safety net, almost.
That's Big Les. Big Les is a safety net.
Big Les is potentially the safety net, but I also don't think he's good enough. So I'd quite like to see Joao Paulinho. He'd be the one I'd be hunting for from Fulham.
He's quality.
He's also a walking yellow card, so it's great for the bets.
He's Premier League experienced as well.
Yeah. And he's a captain.
That's all I want this summer. All I want this summer is three or four Premier League experienced players at the right age to come in with a bit of leadership, a bit of knowledge of the league and a bit of experience and just make this team better rather than signing the Peru
under-4s.
It just
shows you how much of a bollock the club dropped by not getting hold of Rice. And I mean, from what I understand, you know, Rice was interested and then Winstanley screwed it all up.
Mm.
Shock.
Yeah, no, we've heard the same. It's again, we could do a whole pod on just the technical directors and how you could adjust it and make things different. But we have digressed. We should obviously continue. But obviously, that is the Echo 11. The Echo 11 is the team that played Aston Villa, should everyone be fit. So let us know your thoughts on that, obviously, on the old Twitterings, or X, formerly known as Twitter. But we will move swiftly on now. And obviously, we've got to talk a bit more about Spurs. So, as Tom said, as the resident stat shagger, which we need to get on, put on a hat. I think that's the thing which Tom needs. Spurs have been fairly higgledy-piggledy of late. But,
ooh, good word.
No, that's a great word, isn't it? But Chidge, is there anybody you look at in that Spurs side and go, do you know what? I'm a bit worried about him turning up.
Yeah, actually. One or two. Son, obviously, he's a very good player. You can't deny that. I would have... you know, last summer, I wouldn't have had the problem with the club buying Maddison. I think he's just the kind of player we needed. You know, he wouldn't have been expensive. He's Premier League proven. He's played for England. He's a good player. Bit of an arse, but, you know, if he's your player, you don't mind that, do you? I'm actually bizarrely worried about Timo Werner.
I'm going to say the same.
Because, you know, we used to describe him as like a Jack Russell chasing a balloon on the fan cast. And he is the definition of couldn't hit a cow's arse with a banjo. So it's nailed on. He'll score a worldie against us, isn't it? I loved Timo Werner. I think it always helps, doesn't it, with players when they've actually got a decent song, even if they're rubbish. You know, you kind of love them because you like singing the song. But I like Timo Werner because he was rubbish, but he always tried. And I mean, I grew up in a time when Chelsea were full of rubbish players who tried. So I've kind of got a soft spot for players like that. But he's nailed on the score, isn't he? Absolutely nailed on.
He is. It's going to be like a Havertz situation, 2.0. It's really funny because me and Tom are in a group chat with a few of our friends that goes to Chelsea. And before the game, we were all sat there jokingly going, Havertz is going to score a hat-trick, isn't he? And then when the second went in, you could hear all of us, even just looking at the screen, you could hear everyone screaming, just sort of going, oh my God, it's going to happen. We're going to die. Like, it's moments like that. And Timo Werner, I don't know if he'll get a hat trick, but I do think he'll score. I like that he tried. I do think as well, you talk about Juan Sebastian Verón, right, in terms of being that player who was technically streets ahead of people. Timo Werner wasn't technically streets ahead, but what he was a player who was built to get behind the lines. And the problem we like to play is we just like to tap it about. Or at that point, it was tap, 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 tap. There was no directness to our play. And when you look at Timo Werner, when he tries to get in behind when he's playing on the left-hand side, he would always be someone who would stretch the play, which is what we want Mudryk to do that at the minute. I'd actually show Mudryk compilations of Timo Werner going, you see where he is on the pitch? You need to be doing exactly the same. Just keep running, keep running, keep running. But I mean, it remains to be seen, but he's definitely someone I worry about. But a big thing with Spurs as well is this is, you know, the fifth best attack versus the sixth best attack in terms of goals scored. Spurs have obviously got the fifth best defence in the league as well. They've done pretty well. But, you know, of course, they've only played 32 games. So we'll have to see what happens with that. So, Chidge, if you're in the dressing room and you're giving that team talk, how do we beat Spurs?
That's a good question. Well, first of all, they got to play like they did in the second half against Villa. Because, you know, not just the way they played technically, because I thought they moved... I mean, you know, they moved the ball quickly, which is absolutely imperative. I mean, in many ways, actually, you know, playing against Villa was quite a good template for playing against Spurs, because they're quite similar, aren't they, in the way that they play. They will... I mean, I know Spurs play with a much higher line, but they're going to hit you on the break. Basically, they got a lot of pace, and that's what Villa do. So we've had a bit of good prep. What we need to do is kind of what we did against them up at you know, up in whenever it was, October, I think, you know, which is to get in, you know, get in behind them. I mean, this is where Mudryk could really come into his own, and Madueke actually, because he's and Jackson again, because they, I mean, Jackson, my God, He had Kyle Walker on toast in the semi-final. Very few people do that. So he's got pace to burn. So we need to exploit their obvious weakness, which is the high line. But we need to be really solid. I mean, again, you know, as it always tends to be, you know, football is a very simple game. And, you know, if you control and win the midfield, you will win more games than you will lose. And I think for most of this season, that's been one of our many Achilles heels. And the fact that we've got Caicedo and Gallagher operating there fills me with a little bit more confidence that we will compete in the midfield. But, you know, it's the same old thing with Chelsea. We will beat Spurs if we can finish our dinner, which invariably we can't, and we don't make stupid Keystone Cops defensive errors, you know. But I'll tell you what, we have to beat Spurs. It's a criminal offence. You know, 25 years to life in prison if you do not beat Spurs. I mean, I don't know if you boys were there, but when we were, I think it must have been the awful Mourinho season where he got the tin tack just before Christmas. We played Bournemouth away. I was lucky enough to get a ticket, and I think we won 3-0. And we spent the entire match singing. Am I allowed to swear?
Of course you are.
Okay.
Of course you are.
We said, "Beat fucking Tottenham! You better beat fucking Tottenham!" And I've seldom heard a Chelsea away section sing anything with such menace in my life. The players were made very clear that there would be dire consequences if they didn't beat Tottenham. And they actually looked quite worried. It was a thing to see. But it's, you know, you got to beat Tottenham. You got to beat Tottenham. Otherwise, there'll be trouble.
It's a situation where I completely agree. Because I was there that season. Obviously, I was there when we won Leicester the league. That was the same season. And, you know, even though we didn't win that, I think it was the vitriol that we fought with that made you proud. Like, it's one of those moments where we took a team on, even though we weren't as good, and we delivered. And I was also, unfortunately, there during the diabolical Maurizio Sarri season where we did lose. And it felt like a funeral. In the years I've been going, that 15-16 season kind of petered out, as did last year. We had that moment at the end against Spurs, but, you know, it was a moment. But it was one of the few moments, I think, when we didn't get Champions League under Conte, and the second season was another one, I think, for me. And obviously there's been other occasions throughout the time I've been going. But that was the first time I actually felt so deflated watching Chelsea. It was like oh my God, like, this is going in the toilet, there's problems here. And, you know, it's all about stepping up against Spurs. It's the game which I think, for me, when I look at the fixture list, when it comes out in June, July, I look at when we play the champions, unless we are the champions, of course, when we play Arsenal and when we play Spurs. And when we play, I look for Liverpool as well, because I hate Liverpool. And Anfield, I want to go and beat them. So those are the four games I look for. And Spurs is just the one. I mean, for me, Chidge, so growing up, my first ever loss as a Chelsea fan, my first ever trip to Wembley, my first ever cup final was 2008. And that's the reason I hate Spurs. So I'm there like, right, that for me, the boundary was set then. So, like, I've often had the conversation of, like, people like, if your kid turned around and said, "Do you want to support Spurs?" I'd say, I don't care, go put them at home. That's it. It's that simple. I won't allow it. I don't care how good Spurs are at that point. If it's one of those situations where, like, they want to support a better team, like anyone, that's just not them. Obviously, the bottom line is they will not be supporting another team. And if they do, they will be in a kennel outside. That is exactly how they'll be treated. But, you know, having said that, it's just, you've got to go out. You've got to beat Spurs. And I think this the one thing which I think has been missing from this new ownership is an understanding of the Chelsea DNA. And I really hope, and I don't hope for Poch. So we're going to have to talk about how big this game is going to be for him before we wrap up. But I don't care who it is. They've got to go in and they've got to say, if it's Jason Cundy, who obviously still works for the club, you've got to be in there and you've got to say, "Lads, it's Tottenham." That's the conversation that Frank Lampard used to have. That's the conversation that everyone's. You need to go, "Lads, it's Tottenham." That's all that should matter. So if we can step up to the plate and end their Champions League hopes and also potentially improve ours for European football, not Champions League, unfortunately, it's a win-win for me. So there is no other excuses. But obviously, talking about it, I said previously, Chidge, for Pochettino, and obviously I've got to ask you how you feel about him. How big is this game?
Well, big, but not. I don't know about the, you know, because he used to manage them thing. I mean, I wasn't massively impressed with how obsequious he was up there back in October. I you know, but I can understand that. But I think a lot of water has gone under the bridge since then. I'll tell you what. I've noticed actually the last couple of weeks. I mean, just to go off on a tangent slightly, we've suddenly seen a very different side of Poch, haven't we? I mean, the last presser was fascinating because he stuck the boot into the players, he stuck the boot into Winstanley and Stewart, he stuck the boot into the ownership and the way things are being run. And okay, there are two views on that. Either he's making a point, or he knows he's going to get the tin tack, so he doesn't care anymore. I'd like to think it's the former, because basically he's right with everything he said. But I think really to summarize it, what we're seeing from Poch is something that we've been demanding for a long time, which is a bit of fight and passion. And I saw that on the touchline, actually, having just watched the game. He was up and about. He was going mad when we scored. He was absolutely apoplectic when the goal was taken away by VAR. So, you know, maybe just at the right time, we're seeing the kind of fight and passion that we expect from a Chelsea manager. You know, because I absolutely believe that, you know, on the one hand, yes, you know, the manager needs to be calm, particularly when he's got a young side. You know, because if you lose your heads in matches, you don't tend to win them. But, you know, it starts with him. He's the leader, you know. If he cares and if he's fighting, then that will translate to the players. You know, we all know, we go to matches, we spend a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of effort, and a lot of emotional energy in following this bloody football club. We care about it. We want our players to care about it too. And we want our manager to be, you know, the key representative of that fight, care and passion. And I'm beginning to see it. And he will, I think it's real. I mean, it's massive for him, isn't it? Because if he wins it, you know, obviously it's good for us because we'll get higher up the table. But I think it's important for, you know, because so many supporters can't, are not having Poch, are they? And I'm sure it has a lot to do with the fact that he was the Spurs manager, which I think, I mean, frankly, in this day and age, I think it's just stupid because these guys are professionals, you know. They don't see it like we do. But so I think for him to beat Spurs at home, you know, in front of his own fans, and screw their chances of European football is massive, because I think it, in a way, it kind of sends out a weird tacit message that I'm Chelsea, I'm not Spurs anymore. And I think he needs to do that. I mean, I think he needs to engage with the fans a lot more. I think we do need to see him going to the away ends and applauding the fans. We need to see that engagement from him, because if he doesn't do that, it'll cost him his job, frankly, because if he doesn't get the supporters on side, they'll go, oh, you can piss off, mate, we'll have somebody else. And I actually think that would be a big mistake, because I don't think we're going to get anybody much better, frankly. So we're better off with Poch than getting some unheard-of Herbert from Europe who will get us relegated.
Yeah, I think that there is an argument to that. I mean, look, for me, it does come down to the connection bit, where I feel very disconnected from him as a coach. And look, for me, it's not a case of... people. I think people have used Sarri as an example with that, where maybe he doesn't engage with the fans as much, but and that is maybe some. Yeah, I mean, didn't we all? I mean, at the end, I didn't so much. It's purely because you could finally see, I think, the fruits of labour in Baku. I could kind of from where I was sat, you could see how everything had pieced together after 50-odd games.
Hazard and Kante, mate, not the fruits of
and
Sarri,
Pedro yeah. And Pedro and Giroud, that trio of glorious goals.
Yeah. But
unlike the trio we have now of missing.
Oh, God, Giroud's off to LA as well, which is always depressing. But I digress. Look, for me, look, I am at heart. I've often tried to hone it in a little bit and kind of rein it back. I am a passion merchant. That is how I like to roll. It probably doesn't help with my genetic code, with the Italian in there being the most prominent factor. But for me, I think it's important. And I think culturally at Chelsea, especially, you'd probably say since Mourinho maybe, where you have that connection with the fans. I mean, in my lifetime anyway, Chidge might tell us different. He might say, well, no, there's been other managers beforehand who really got the crowd on side and got us moving. But, you know, if you look at how Mourinho engaged the fans and how Conte engaged the fans, and I'm not asking for them to jump into the crowd, and, you know, do stuff. Too cool as well. But he, just to show that passion. And as Chidge said, you know, we have seen it. I think at the end of Villa, when he was on his knees, I'm like, oh my God, like we're seeing someone who's like really invested. And I think it's probably come because it has got tougher. And I think after that Arsenal result, maybe that was the kick in the teeth that this team needed. But, you know, if we can get some form of European football, you know, I don't care if I'm going to Minsk. I don't care if we have to go to, you know, Kiev and I have to wear Kevlar. You know, I will go. And if we can get something, I think we said at the beginning of the season, Tom and myself, that as long as there was the improvement from last year and there was a marked improvement, which I think we have seen, then I'm happy. And that remains the case. But the bottom line is, lads, it's Tottenham. So let's go get 3 points. But that has been the Chelsea Echo with the Chelsea Fancast, with Chidge from the Chelsea Fancast. So make sure you head across and check them out. Chidge, where can people find you if they haven't already found you?
Well, on all the socials at Chelsea Fancast. We obviously do the podcast every Monday and Friday night, basically review and a preview show. But we've recently, against my better judgment, Louis, the bloody lovey that is Jonathan Kidd, the attention seeker that is Jonathan Kidd, has persuaded me that to go back to our YouTube channel, which we have had actually for years. I mean, we had a YouTube channel back in about 2013 when we used to do the show on live TV. It was like Wayne's World TV, but we did it anyway. So yeah, live on YouTube, Facebook, podcast afterwards, Mondays and Fridays, and we're at Chelsea Fancast pretty much everywhere.
Amazing. Well, guys, make sure you go and check out the Fancast. And if you've come from the Fancast and you have enjoyed the youthful perspective, please do make sure you give us a follow, because we are idiots, but we all love Chelsea. And, well, we're idiots. I think that's kind of the best way to describe us. Yeah, exactly. Chidge is an idiot as well, but we all love being idiots. It's what we do. But if you have enjoyed it, please do make sure that you give us a follow. If you're new around here, give us a 5-star review. It always helps. And if you want to check out some other cool stuff as well, we have shows on the sideline, because this is a sideline production. Chidge, you'll like it, actually. This week, we're doing a pub talk, and we've got top three Wembley finals. It's basically where me and Tom have the conversations which we'd have in the pub and argue, but we actually come up and look back and enjoy those. But then the two after that, we've got Mourinho Part 1 signings and Mourinho Part 2 signings, which was a very interesting show to do. So if you want to go and check those out, make sure you head across to the sideline. If you do sign up to the sideline as well, by the way, you've got the chance of winning a signed John Terry shirt. So I'm pretty sure Chid's going to be getting on that and probably trying to win that. So make sure you win it instead of him. I don't want to have to give it to Chidge, you know.
I've already got one.
I've already got one. Chidge showing off there.
Two.
Yeah, all right, Chidge. well, there you go. Chidge's already got them, so you don't have to worry about it. Yeah, exactly. Two right. But make sure you sign up so you can win it. Make sure you follow us on the socials. Engage with the Echo. Tell your pals. Tell your family. Tell your nan. And if you see Chidge, tell him to do it as well if he's not done it already. Just make sure you double check. Just make sure you guys head across to the Fancast to check that out as well. But guys, it's Tottenham. Let's get the win and up the fucking Chelsea.